Blog Talk Radio.
Pointers, what's happening? Today is Tuesday, July 14th, 2015. The call-in number for this broadcast is 347-857-3293. Again, if you wish to call in on this broadcast, it's 347-857-3293. We are requesting that if you do not wish to speak to the host, that you mute, you put your phone on mute, and simply sit back, relax, take notes, and listen. Today's broadcast will continue our discussion of the anatomy of oppression. With that in mind, I would like to give you a brief synopsis of where we're going this evening. But before that, I would like to say hello to our regular panelists. I'd like to greet Brother Larry. I'd like to greet Brother Minerly. I'd like to greet Sister Lynn. I'd like to greet all of the others from all over our nation, because truly this is a national broadcast. And I would especially like to give a shout-out to Sister Mary Neal, who is our technician. The flag is down. Now what? America loves to talk about democracy, but hates people elected democratically or who successfully fight for a true democratic electoral process. The current incarceration of our beloved Reverend Pinckney illustrates this fact. We supposedly have the inalienable right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But black and brown people live now and have always lived under and around arbitrary authority that is white authority. Control of education is an integral part of a democratic organization, a very natural and obvious structure. Community control of police, however, is against the organization of government control from the top down. So at this point, with those points made, I would like to turn our microphone over to our host, the revolutionary, the union organizer, the political prisoner freedom fighter, our own brother Ralph Pointer.
Thank you, Betty. Wonderful introduction. I don't know if I deserve all of that, but we will begin the program as usual with a reading of what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. Because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And so let us begin. And one of the things I like to remind people, because I guess I have a great ego, is every day this statement becomes more real and more evident by the actions of this U.S. government. Just today, when they are looking to ratify the contract in Iran over nuclear weapons, the hypocrisy of America stands out. And one of the things that I heard on major media was that they were going to look into the past to make sure that they straightened out all of the issues of the past regarding Iran. And the issue that they talked about was the Iranians taking over the American embassy and keeping people captive. And my question is, wait a minute. This is not the history of Iran. Let's go back where America was involved in overthrowing Mossadegh, a democratically elected president of Iran, and replacing him with Shah of Iran, a dictator. And we don't have to go any further than that. The history of the Shah with torture and giving of the natural resources of Iran to the industrial powers at a cheap price is a part of the record that we do not have time to go over tonight. And so they're continuing with this, what would you say, it's euphemistically talked as revisionary history. Well, let's be straight about it. It's the history of lies to cover the previous lies that America is a democracy, that America wants democracy, that America wants freedom and justice for all. It is a lie, and every day America proves it's a lie. And I could go on and on, but I've been told that I've been verbose, and I'm going to break it off there. And we're adding something to our program tonight. We have a summer reading list. You know, our host, Betty, who's a librarian, and our contributor, Lynn Stewart, was the librarian that encouraged and helped Betty become a librarian. And so they're very much interested in books. And for those who read, we're going to introduce a few people and a few books, and I'm going to ask Lynn to be prepared to do that. But first, I think we go to Larry Pinckney to give us an update on Reverend Pinckney, who is the person who we must consider and support at this moment in history. Larry, are you with us?
I am indeed.
Hello.
And I'm. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes,
I'm here. All right. First, I'd like to convey my greetings to, obviously, first and foremost, you know, to you, Brother Ralph, and for the tremendous work that you're doing. Also, of course, to, as always, to Sister Lynn, to Lynn Stewart, and always to Sister Betty Davis. You all are so appreciated and so needed. And for that matter, I extend my love and strength to everyone in the audience and everyone who's making this program or this show possible. Now, having said that, because I think it's important for us to value each other and know how important each of us are. Having said that, let me give a quick update with respect to political prisoner Reverend Edward Pinckney. Reverend Pinckney continues to be held in the confines of Coldwater, Michigan, in the prison there, and remain strong, remain determined. What has happened thus far is that on Friday, July 10th, this past Friday, the 10th of July, the motion was in fact filed, and we're talking specifically about an appeal bond motion in order for Reverend Pinckney to get out on appeal. Of course, he never should have been in prison in the first place, to put it very mildly. Never should have been charged, but that's another story. So that was done according to the court records, when I say the court records, I'm talking specifically about the Michigan Appellate Court, or the Michigan Court of Appeals. Also, on that same date, July 10th, 2015, this past Friday, a motion to file an amicus in the brief, as it were, and the brief itself, both the motion and the brief, were filed in support of Reverend Pinckney's appeal bond request. And this was filed by an attorney by the name of Mark Fancher. Mark is with the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan. So those are the two most important things that I wanted to share with everyone with respect to the ongoing struggle of our political prisoner, Reverend Pinckney. I do want to say at this point in time that it's about all of the political prisoners, all political prisoners, of which there are myriads in this country. And I always like the way, Ralph, that you point out that these were, you know, brothers and sisters who stood up, you know, when for our communities, who stood up for us, irrespective of where they were, anywhere in this country, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, the South, you name it. And so, therefore, we have many political prisoners all over this country, many of whom have been in prison for decades. I'm not saying a decade, I'm saying decades, as you know, Ralph, some up to 40 and over 40 years in the gulag, the prison gulag system, torture system. So the struggle continues. I just want to say very quickly, with that old movie, Ralph, the one, The Wizard of Oz, I just want to say, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. When you look at this so-called Iran deal, all it is another smoke and mirror, smoke and mirror tactic on the part of drone man, kill list, Barack Obama. So let's keep things in perspective here. Let's understand what this is really about. And I'm going to stop it at that. I want to convey Reverend Edward Pinckney's greetings and love to everyone, along with my own greetings and love. Stay strong. Stay strong. All power to the people. Thank you all so very, very much.
And thank you, Larry, for your continued struggle. And we know how to free and support political prisoners. And in our time, there is only one Puerto Rican political prisoner left in jail, Oscar Lopez Rivera, and we know why and how other political prisoners got out. Not allow anyone, Latino or Spanish-speaking community, to get elected if they didn't support political prisoners. We have our spin out. She has spoken on this program about what support she got while she was in jail and how the prisoners and the administration came to respect her and treat her differently because we on outside treated her differently by sending letters. And so let me give you Reverend E. Pinckney. Address is 29671 Lakeland Correctional Facility, 141 Street, Coldwater, Michigan, 49036. Reverend Edward Pinckney, 294671 at Lakeland Correctional Facility, 141 First Street, Coldwater, Michigan, 49036. Just write a letter. Just write a letter. And it will improve the life of our people. We are on the outside. Get your church, get your school. And I tell Betty Davis, you know, the great teacher, the great activist, she's going to be removed again because she constantly speaks of political prisoners and what we must do to support them. We must have all of our educators, all of our preachers, all of our people of conscience talking about political prisoners. Support those on the inside and support those on the outside by joining us working for our political prisoners. And so now I'm going to switch, because I've talked again too long, I'm going to switch to Lynn Stewart and see what she is up to this evening. Lynn Stewart, are you there?
I'm here, and I just want to start out by saying it's been a very, very busy week, and it started to some degree by last Saturday. We were fortunate to be on the People's Tribunal for the hearing of evidence concerning police murder and brutality in the United States. It was held at Sacred Ground, the Audubon Ballroom, and they had the very floorboards that Malcolm stood on when he was murdered. Those floorboards served as the podium on which people took the oath to testify truthfully, and they promised not to dishonor the memory of Malcolm X. It was a wonderful day, although it was a heart-rending day, a difficult day, hearing from all of the people from all over the country, from Baltimore, from Minneapolis, and our own Juanita Young and Nicholas Paywood, both of whom are parents who lost the children to New York City police gunfire. It was a wonderful hearing. It was set up in a manner to be reminiscent of a court hearing. We had a panel of judges, Roger Wareham, Carl Dix, Larry Ham, Pam Africa, Ralph, myself, others. King Downing was a moderator of this. And although neither Cynthia McKinney nor Charles Barron managed to show up, I can't understand why not, but they did not. But Ward Churchill appeared as an expert witness to talk about the epidemics of police brutality and the history of that. So it was a very good day, a very long day, a very hot day, but I think that we brought out a tremendous amount of testimony concerning this terrible evil that is abroad in the land. And I do want to say that it being summer, also, this is a time to kind of have some minutes to reflect. There are a lot of issues going around. There are a lot of invites to events, et cetera. But I think we have to also replenish our own stock of enthusiasm, our own stock of get out there and do it some more. Uh-huh. And I'd like to recommend two things to read and to think about. The first is a new book by Chris Hedges, a name that's familiar to many of you. It's called The Wages of Rebellion, and it basically defines our time as a time which is on the edge of revolution. And it talks about all of the things that he perceives as putting us there. And he hopes that if there is not a revolution, that the continuation of the wonderful way in which people are rising up will continue. And we're saying that there is a new radicalism But the old radicalism is also a part of that. And he does have a beautiful statement about there's nothing rational about our rebellion. We rebels. And to rebel against insurmountable odds is an act of faith, that sometimes the rebel is doomed in this faith. But we cannot turn our backs on it. It is part of us. It is intrinsic. And in this book, which you can buy from any of the bookstores, probably not Amazon, given their tendency toward being such a terrible monopoly, but I can tell you any decent bookstore will have The Wages of Rebellion by Chris Hedges, or it will get it for you. The other book that I truly want to bring to your attention, because this is not something that's ever going to be reviewed in the New York Times. And I want to say that this book, which I just received today, although I knew of it for a long time, is called The Black Panther is an African Cat.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are familiar with this book, you know this is the poetry of exploration and testimony. It is by Wapashitwe Mundo Ayanwelanga, known to us as Mongo, slave named David Rice. He was a Black Panther. He's been in jail since he was 22 years old, 40 years on COINTELPRO rigged charges of murdering a policeman. There is so much evidence to exonerate him and his co-defendant, Ed Poindexter, who are in jail out in Omaha, Nebraska. But their case was never a case that made front and center among us progressives. But I certainly think that this is a book of poems that brings his, Mongo's fabulous humanity and intellectual brilliance to all of us. And it's a wonderful thing to just pick up and read a poem every now and then to remember our political prisoners are not just one-dimensional people who had an incident in which the government, they are broad, they are the world, they are loving. And I just want to read to you, apropos of what we announced as part of the theme of tonight's show, and that is, the Confederate flag is down, now what? Mongo wrote this a long time ago, when I say that a long time ago, probably 10 years ago, about flags, and it's entitled American Forest, South Carolina Trees. I'm only going to read it in part because we don't want to burden the airwaves here. But it starts out by saying, this flag of Bill Clinton and Strom Thurmond represents this old glory in the here and now, referring to the American flag. Where it is not Confederate flags sewn on the shirts of the cops who commit their brutalities on the streets of America, not Confederate flags flying in front of the courts that disperse to us injustice with such consistent regularity. It is not Confederate flags in the classrooms of the schools committing menticide on our children, not Confederate flags on the grounds of banks with us and them lending policies by which we are them who systematically can't get what others can. Not Confederate flags flapping from poles of corporate headquarters where CEOs decide that the communities where we live are prime locations for toxic waste dumps, chemical refineries, and such.
Wow.
Nor in the shadow of the Confederate flag do the hearses cruise and the cruisers creep, their sirens like hyenas howl, their drivers on the prowl, to catch the crimes in progress of driving while black, walking while black, just chilling while black, letting the general description, fitting the general description of, to catch the optical illusions of wallets that look like guns, not in the shadow of the Confederate flag do these and other kinds and shapes of murder run and deceptions big and small. But in the shadow of the stars and stripes that we sing an anthem to and pledge allegiance as if it's liberty and justice for all, included us. Mm-hmm. And we sing to thee I sing with eyes touched shite, tight shut, to keep the light of truth from slipping in, that this European flag, like the other which we protest, flies not for us, for our homelessness. Everybody should buy this book. It should be on everybody's bookshelf. It should be read at the meetings you go to. The Black Panther is an African cat. You may go online at Afro-American Bookstore. That's one word, Afro-American Bookstore. And that is www.afroamericanbookstore.com. And on that website, you will find out how to send your $10 to get this fabulous book, to have it, and its poetry and its insights. It's just a wonder. Because summer is not just a time to just continue to fight. It's a time to replenish our resources and be ready to keep on keeping on. Thank you all
thank
my
you, Lynn.
Comrades.
Hey, thanks, Lynn. You really, you know, like I think of myself as an artist, and I want to read another poem by Waylongo. But I'm going to forego that, and hopefully maybe later in the program I'll have an opportunity to read Who's Fooling Who. And it, the first line is, you call us niggas. But I'm going to forego that and ask Joel to come in on that and tell us, are you there, Joel? Joel.
Yes. Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Could you click, would you tell us what you think about what you have heard so far? That is anything. Iran, Italy, how we're going to be affected by what's happening to, you know, like what's happening right now.
Well, I think the two of the corners that were turned internationally were in Greece and in Iran, and both of them are still works in progress. We have to see how the agreements work out and what role they play, because whatever the words that they're saying about these agreements now, these are words in the lying media that is designed mainly to fool all sectors of public opinion, including many of us. They're aimed in a certain way. So we have to pay very careful attention. For example, very often something is presented as a peace process, and in reality it's sort of a run-up to a failure, and then all-out war can still break out. So we don't know. I don't want to be excessively pessimistic, because I think that the agreements also represent a shift in the relationship of power in the world, in which the imperialists are in a decline, although they're still very dangerous, but they're no longer able to just get their way all the time as they used to before this particular period. So I think people are awakened in struggle around the world, and that the U.S. and also inside the United States, as that Chris Hedges' book illustrates, there's beginning to be a disillusionment and a turn against a power structure that was almost universally worshipped at one time by much of public opinion, which is now in a developing stage. I think there's still a lot to do. There's There's a lot to organize in order to make it a living reality, but the public opinion is changing, and the central system of capitalism, which especially in its current imperialist stage, is the string that holds all the beads of oppression together. More and more people from more and more different angles are seeing that, and they're seeing it as a major life-threatening problem to us all. That is, that we're not going to, that if we don't get rid of capitalism, it's going to get rid of all of us. And so it's a survival responsibility. It prevents any framework for solving any of the real problems. And a problem is something that has to be seen from the standpoint of a solution. And I think that solution is to transform the world into a number of real democracies and an international democracy, which is really based on the overwhelming majority of the people and which is not a fraud run by a tiny handful that is squeezing everybody else. I think the solution really involves a very thorough revolution. It involves taking away the property from especially the rich oligarchy that is the central financial force that has subordinated the entire system to itself. And I don't say all private property, but the in one fell swoop, but the property of those who are big enough and rich enough to use their money to bend all of society around the needs of their profitabilities at everybody else's expense. That if they're too big to fail, as they call themselves, then they're really too big to allow. And I think that we need a system in which the land, the natural resources are publicly owned, where the people can really make democratic decisions, where we have a true democratic republic, and people call it socialism, some call it communism, but in reality it's the fulfillment of the democratic republic idea, and eventually a world in which even that becomes obsolete, and in which we have a benevolent administration of things instead of a differentiated government. So, anyway, maybe that's a little bit too generalistic, but
thank you so much for that contribution. But I'd like you to go back over one line that you had repeated, if it is that you had stated. I would like you to repeat. If it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist. Could you give us a little on that again?
Well, I think that they themselves, in bailing out the largest financial corporations, and all the public show is a bunch of zeros flashing across the TV screen. But really what was being done is that this system, which eventually bankrupts everything because its system operated on a taking principle. They all want to take more out of the economy, meaning a profit, than they put into the economy. And, of course, it's an inherent Ponzi scheme, and it comes to fail, even for the biggest bankers and financial institutions. So all of a sudden, they have, through their system, run these trillion-dollar businesses into the ground, and then they wanted to take what little money the regular taxpayer has and whatever programs exist to help people that may even be below the ability to pay taxes, to take the money from the poor and the middle class and to hand it off to these people who were said to be too big to fail. That's how they justified it. We can't let Chase Manhattan Bank or Goldman Sachs or something like that fail. Why? They would drag a lot of the rest of us down with us. So instead, we have to give our money to them to keep them afloat. We won't give it to the Greek people. We won't give it to the Puerto Rican people. We'll give it to the billionaire bankers. And the justification is they're too big to fail. I say if they have wrapped the economy around themselves at the expense of everybody else to that extent, they're too big to allow to exist that way. They've become monstrous. I mean, they were always exploiters and oppressors, but when they're too big to fail in that sense, it means that the point has come where human survival demands that they be dismantled, that their resources be handed over to the public from which it was stolen in the first place. From American land, stolen land.
I appreciate that. That's a great contribution. And you have moved into what is happening in Greece and the rest of the world. Greece, America, and America. And I'm going to ask Dick if he has been listening to comment on that we have discussed this evening or something he would like to bring in thinking about week.
I've been very busy lately, Ralph. I'm getting ready to make a presentation at the libraries in this borough of Richmond that I live in, about my book, which is called Human Nature, A New Theory of Psychology. And I've set up meetings at four of the large libraries, and I'm working on my presentation there. But it is an interesting book, and I would be very pleased if Lynn would read it. I sent you a copy, Ralph. If Lynn would read it and give us a review of it. It isn't really about politics until it gets near the end, after I've discussed human nature and psychology and everything else. But I think you will find the message there. I speak about the war between poverty and excess wealth in the final the final pages of my book. And that is the problem. For example, Bernie Sanders will go around and say, oh, we have to put a higher tax on the rich. And I say, no, that's the wrong notion. I mean, we can allow that there will be rich people and poorer people, so we can have a system that we don't have to revert to 19th century economics, and say, oh, it's capitalism or socialism. As I said, it's psychologically, we can't get rid of either one. Capitalism is greed. Socialism is helping others. And okay, so they've got to get together and they're all in all of us. But the point is that all Bernie Sanders has to ask for, or all any intelligent person who wants change, he has to ask for, is say, when is enough enough? Cap all income. Put a cap and say by your tax laws, you don't have to have a new constitution. You can do it right in this constitution. And you're going to say a 100% tax on all individuals who earn more than, let's say $5 million. That leaves plenty of room for entrepreneurs annually. And on anybody who has wealth over a certain number like that. And on all corporations who earn over $5 billion. You can let them be big and everything else, but there must be a cap. There must be a point beyond which no one's income or accumulated wealth can go, because then you create something that is a monster headed to destroy us all and to destroy our society. So, well, let's talk not about taxing the rich more than we're taxing them now. Let's say, when is enough enough? I mean, what is your limit? Are you satisfied? Would you be satisfied with $5 million a year if you were a successful entrepreneur? Would you be satisfied to accumulate, say, $20 million? Certainly not a billion. We can't let you have that much. But what about the corporations? You need a lot of money to run corporations, sure. But corporations can join in contracts to do large ventures if they have to. They don't have to be large entities. What's wrong with $5 billion a year is the maximum income for any corporation whatsoever. And then there's got to be a limit on accumulated wealth. 100% taxation. There was a great book written in 1930 by the economist, a conservative economist, as it turns out, named Irving Fisher. It was called A Theory of Interest. And he proved that just through the principles of interest, money accumulates and accumulates, and through inheritances and everything else, it accumulates endlessly, and you're going to get the kind of situation we're getting now. So just cap it. We should be fighting for caps. In other words, no more than this amount of money. You can't have it in your banks. You can't have it in your corporation bank accounts or anything else. You can't have it in your private wealth. There must be limits. Be generous. We can be generous. You know, that we don't want to, after all, stop people from trying to do better than some other people do. That's human nature. Let them do it. So I say that Bernie Sanders should be asking for a cap. Everybody who's asking should say, you can't earn that much money. A corporation can't have that much money. You can't hold that much accumulated wealth. It belongs to the government. And then when we learn how to create an honest government made of good people with good intentions, then at that point we will be able to say, don't worry, your excess money comes to the government and it is used to help everyone in the world. It is used to eliminate. We've got to eliminate poverty. How do we eliminate poverty? Give absolutely everyone a certain stipend that they can have, whether they work or not. They don't have to work. Enough to live on that would be higher, a little higher than, say, the existing poverty levels. Well, that's all we have to do. This is what I suggest in my book, How You Handle Poverty and Excess Income, Excess Wealth. That's what Plato said. He said those are the two great enemies, poverty and excess wealth, and we have to stop them. Well, we've known that for a long time, but nobody's done anything about it. We let people say, oh, capitalism is where we can add more and more money on. That's not true. You know, there's got to be a stopping point because you destroy society with too much wealth. It is the destruction of the social order. And conservatives should object to that just as much as we progressives and radicals do. So, anyway, go ahead.
Thank you so much for that, Dick. And you've given me a suggestion. You've given us a suggestion, all of those who have listened. Why don't we review Dick's book next week? And we can talk more detail about your theories and the things that we can do for a solution. And so let us pick it up next week at that same time, same place, with Dick Miller's review book of...
Let me make a point. What I can do for you, I can do for Lynn, I can do for anybody who doesn't have a copy of the book who would like to have it. I had a telephone conversation with Mary, you know, our Mary, and I sent her an EPUB file that has my entire book on it. And I can do that for anybody who wants to talk. Look at it. I just point out that most of the politics is in the back of the book because I got a lot of philosophy and psychology that I'm talking about early in the book. But
and so, Mary, are you listening? Would you like to comment on your conversation with Dick? Anything else that you have in mind that would be important for the listeners to hear this?
Well, thank you, Ralph. Yes, I want to congratulate you on the, until now, the background noises were gone. I hear them now, though. In any case, I want to congratulate you on an excellent idea to present books to the public. Reading is fundamental. It's always something I enjoy. And as you know, a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to your audience about a book that I am literary agent to, and that is Bloody Tombs, T-O-O-M-B-S, by a marvelous writer who's a brilliant man.
He's the founder of Food Not Bums in Atlanta. He is a man who was so smart academically that he was given full scholarships to Harvard and Tufts University. However, Bob Darby has bipolar disorder. So this book will show the public how very brilliant people can come down with mental illness like anyone else. And like other people, Bob Darby was homeless for a period and in jail several times. So mental illness is a disease unlike physical diseases that this society punishes people for having. Right now, there are 1.25 million mentally ill people incarcerated. That's over half of our prisoners, and they die daily. Some of them die by their own hands. I read about a young man who they kept in solitary confinement in Rikers Island for 3 years to force him to plea bargain on a stolen backpack that he denied having stole. He denied that he stole. He would not lie on himself. He was kept in Rikers Island in solitary confinement from the age of 16 up to age 19, near 20 years old. It robbed him of 3 years of his life. They released him last fall, and he killed himself last Sunday. He killed himself because he could not live with those memories, and they had destroyed his mental abilities. Solitary confinement has got to go. And so thank you, Ralph. I fight against solitary confinement, the incarceration of mentally ill people, and their wrongful deaths by police. And this book, Bloody Tombs, lets people understand how mental illness even attacks young people of means, like the author of this book. He was a Caucasian Southerner who came from a family with money, but he still had mental illness. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak about that and to remind people that homelessness, prison, and death are inappropriate responses to severe mental illness. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ralph.
Thank you so much for contributing, Mary. Wonderful. And we're going to go to a 718 number. 78. That's me. And so, since we're going to me,
how about you come
I'm
to
going
me?
To. Okay, go ahead. Okay, there's another sound. Go ahead. Give
Hi,
us
I'm
your,
a 718
your...
number two, Ralph. This is Ann.
Ann, go ahead, Ann. Give it. Tell us. Thank you.
Hey, very
Sorry.
Interesting conversation we're having here. Well, speaking of political prisoners, I was just on the phone with Jaleel. Before I called in, and he said to please send his regards to everybody, especially Ralph and Lynn and Betty, and he sounded very good. But, of course, you know, we're still doing this medical justice campaign for Robert Cepes, as you may recall back from when we were doing the Left Forum. We were talking about Robert Cepes, right? Now, I saw Robert Cepes on June 28th, and I can tell you, if you go to jerichoNY.org, that's jerichoNY.org, and you scroll down on the left-hand side, you'll see a thing about this ongoing medical campaign for Seth. And there's a picture of Seth there sitting next to me. And you can see that Seth is not in good health, to say the least. Now, I actually got a chance during this visit to feel this huge mass that he has in the upper left quadrant of his abdomen. It is large. I could also feel these little bumps on his chest. But he's really not doing well, and we are continuing to call in fax to Albany to insist and persist, because we must insist and persist, that, you know, why are we not doing things that in the normal course of events would be done? If you were here out here in minimum security and you suddenly found you had a large mass in the upper left quadrant of your abdomen and you had any kind of health coverage, you would, in the normal course of events, get a sonogram or a CAT scan and then eventually a biopsy, depending on what these other things revealed, right? So that has not happened. And also, he has been coughing blood. So in addition to everything else. So this is really concerning. And, you know, that's my Goomba, as I say. You know, I know Seth for a long time. That's my big brother. And we are not having this. You know, this is insane. I fail to understand how the chief medical officer of the Department of Corrections, can possibly say that we should do nothing about this. You know, I mean, the doctor at Sullivan, whose name is Władysław Sidorowicz, and he should have his medical license revoked, he just, you know, palpates there and says, oh, it must be fatty tissue. I'm like, why would you, A, assume that? Do you have X-ray eyes? And, B, the man doesn't have an ounce of fat on his body. All right? So this has been going on for way too long, you know, and so I'm encouraging everybody to please go to jerichony.org. You can call up the Konigsman in Albany. You can call Holly. She's a health services supervisor. Or you can fax them, or you can do both. Now I often, and you can write to Seth, which would be great. His address is there, Sullivan Correctional Facility, P.O. Box 116, Fallsburg, New York, 12733-0116, which is the same as the P.O. Box. His number is 74A2280. Would be good. More letters he gets, you know, they also pay attention to that. Oh, he's getting a lot of letters. Oh, he's been getting a lot of visits from different people. Oh, there's a few lawyers that are coming to see him. What does this all mean, right? But meanwhile, you know, they had done a chest X-ray back in May. They hadn't told him any of the results of that. So we're also asking for them to do a CAT scan of his chest and do a PPD, which is a TB skin test, just to rule that out. And then if there's any concern about heart failure, they could do an echo of his heart, none of which is, you know, ridiculous. I had an echo done of my heart last year. I don't know why. There was nothing wrong with my heart, but they wanted to do one, so they did it. You know, I have health coverage. I said, sure, go ahead. Whatever you want to do, go ahead and do it. You know, so this has, like, been going on for way too long. This has been going on for months and months. He's progressively getting worse and worse. His wife, Sheila, has a trail of his with him this weekend, so if anything has popped during the week, we'll know about it. But I would really encourage everybody who is listening to please make those phone calls or send those faxes. I personally do not call because my Pam Africa starts coming out when I'm talking to these bastards. And I'm going to start saying things that it's not going to help any, you know. So, you know, so I write and fax. That's what I do. I write a coherent letter. I check it out. I actually write much better than I speak. And then I send that in to them by fax. And they have actually given
you
me some responses.
Very well. And for all of the listeners out there, remember that name, Ann Lamb, because she has been one of the forces of support for all of our political prisoners. And I'm not going to give away the years, Ann. You'll have to do that yourself.
Oh,
but
I don't care. I'm going to be 60 this year. I'm looking forward to being 60 this year. I'm going to be 60 years young in December. Going to have a big bash celebration and continue to do
so
the work.
So she's giving it up herself. Then
I'm
she
giving
has
it up myself.
So
I'm not ashamed
great.
Of being 60.
Oh, I want to talk about the great work you've done for our political prisoners.
Oh, I
not
wish,
only,
I wish.
But
you know,
visiting.
If we had done all this great work, they'd all be home by now. I mean, you know, we got to do a lot more. We really have to get them all home. This is insane. You know, you got
I'm
poor Veronica Bowers, what, 11 years past his max release date? Still going back and forth in the courts with that, you know, oh, he would be a danger to every police officer on the planet if he were released, said the FOP. And I said, wait a minute. I can think of some police officers who would probably love to have Veronica in their country, like the Cuban police, the Vietnamese police, the Venezuelan police, the Nicaraguan police, the Bolivian police, the Ecuadorian police. They would have no problem. You know, so who is the FOP to be talking about every police officer on the planet, you know? But, you
well,
know, we
I
have other
only...
people who are coming up. You know, Mutulu has a release date next year. Who's to say they won't turn around and do the same thing to him?
Well, thank you so much, Ann. And as I say to all of the listeners out there, remember that name, Ann Lamb, because she has done such great work, and she will educate us on our political prisoners. And so... we must continue on. I think we have one more caller before I'm going to take
One thing I wanted to say, Ralph, before you cut me off. Ralph, can I say one more thing?
Yes, you may.
I just wanted to say, talking about Mondo's book, you know, the Black Panther was an African cat. He is also an amazing artist, as many of our prisoners are. And he has some beautiful artwork. If you go and Google in his name, Mondo Welanga, you'll get this whole bunch of beautiful artwork that he has done over the years, in addition to the great poetry. And he's not the only one. Tom Manning's excellent. Oscar Lopez Rivera, beautiful artwork. Sundiata, you know, we could go on and on. These are very creative, very intelligent, very analytical people who can teach us a lot. I have to say that my entire life has been enriched by the political prisoners. And I would encourage everybody, get in touch with New York City Jericho, nycjericho@gmail.com. More than happy to take you up on a visit. We'll pay for your bus. You know, you won't have to be by yourself if it's the first time you've walked into a prison. And you will meet some of the greatest minds that we have in this country. And that's the reason that the government is refusing to let them go, because they are afraid of the ideas of our political prisoners and prisoners of war.
Thank you so much. And,
thank you,
and
Ralph,
I want
for having
to hear
me
one
on.
Thing from you, mm-hmm. And that is, well, you promise to be on our program every week. You are an encyclopedia of activism and, you know, knowledge of our political prisoners. And, yeah, we're going to be there for your 60th birthday. But
okay.
In the meantime, we're going to be here next week.
I will be here next week. I only wasn't here last week because we had a big filing day on Monday, and I was working late at work.
Thank you so much, Ann. Look forward to seeing you next week. Let us go to the next caller. 347. Are you still with us?
Yeah, it's me, Rich. It's me, Ralph. Yes,
okay.
It's Rich.
Rich, okay. Rich, you have anything to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say your show has been great. I've been working with Ralph, and people don't know who are listening, with Ralphman for a long time. And what I find is the fake left infiltrates a lot of the events I've seen, and we have to find the real people that want to get involved. And there's just too many people claiming to be us and they're not us. Like, it's just, I don't know what to say. It is just very frustrating sometimes to see people. In my opinion, that's why political prisoners have been in jail for that long.
That is
very
true.
You look at the root of it. All these people stood out like they like us, but they're not like us. Because I'm going
to
shit with people that claim to be like wanting to help poor people. And I got this nice letter that I gave you, Ralph, from one of the Chicano political prisoners.
Great.
And he mentioned poverty pimps, and we talked about that. Now, I'm at this so-called radical anarchist storefront, and it's all these yuppie kids, and I brought up the drug problem in my building. And one of the main Black Panthers did was fight that.
We have boiled down to 90 seconds. And we're quickly coming to an end, and I look forward to hearing your voice next week on this program to tell us about political poverty pimps and the like, and infiltrators and the like. And thank you so much. Thank you, Ann.
We want to thank 219-5053. Would you please say a word as we close out? 219-5053. All right, we're going to say thank you, turn it back over to our host.
Okay, we're going to go out with that theme song because we have much to talk about when we talk about Nina Simone and her life and how it affects us all. Good night, all.
I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole.